The idea was we were going to protect their identity and keep their secrets. I had a lot of secrets.
I told the police department what he was doing. They didn't listen. I told the state's attorney's office what he was doing. They didn't listen. If no one else was going to listen, I had to do something.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Stoop Storytelling Series podcast. I'm Laura Wexler.
And I'm Jessica Hinken.
This week on The Stoop,
Secrets and Lies, two stories about the power of lies and how it can sometimes be as hard to stop lying to ourselves as it is to stop others from lying. That's deep.
So deep. And true.
Yeah, I guess it is. First, though, let's thank our sponsor, Park School, which is a pre-K through grade 12.
Independent co-ed progressive school on
awesome
a lovely
place.
Campus where Jessica Hankins' kids go. What else do you have to say? So this first story is by a wonderful woman named Nancy Murray. She's a writer. She's an actor. One time I think she was a realtor. Now she's a teacher at CCBC.
She ages like a fine wine, too.
She really does.
Every time I see her, I'm like, she's more attractive. How is that possible?
Yeah. And she's wonderful.
Yes.
Let's not just objectify her.
Listen, I
know.
You're
always doing that.
Nope. I've gotten better. This is a minor setback.
You're lying to yourself. It's hard to stop lying to yourself.
It's hard to stop me from lying.
Right. That's what I was getting at when I was like, it's hard for Jessica to stop lying and it's hard for me to get Jessica to stop lying. No, seriously. So this first story by Nancy was told at a show we did this summer called Secrets and Lies. And it was so Stoop story. So, you know, our usual true personal tales and magic. So was looking at sort of the pleasure of being conned and then also the pain of it. And so Nancy's story, she ended the show with this, and I think it's a really surprising take on just the phenomenon of lying. So
take a listen.
Take a listen.
When I was 16 years old, I got pregnant. I told my mother I wanted to go away, have the baby, place it for adoption, and come home without anybody else knowing a thing about it. So my mother went to found a place in Prince George's County. It was called an infant and maternity home. And I went there to hide out for the next 8 months or so. It was kind of like a hospital. It was a big brick building. It had doors, you know, double doors that opened up into kind of a cold reception area. The first floor of the building was a daycare center for foster children. It had an elevator that went up to the second floor, and that's where the pregnant teenage girls were hiding. Nobody was allowed on that elevator except for the nuns that ran the business and the girls that lived there. The idea was we were going to protect their identity and keep their secrets. I had a lot of secrets. I had been keeping secrets since I was a very little girl. My father made me understand that if anybody outside was to find out what was happening inside our home, then terrible things could happen. Maybe my brothers and sisters would be taken to foster care. Maybe my mother would die. It was a pretty heavy burden for a six-year-old girl to handle. But he told me that I could protect my family from that fate if I just agreed to never tell the truth about myself. Done. I took my responsibility very, very seriously. And I never told the truth about anything. I, by the time I was 16 years old, was a chronic and compulsive liar. So when I went to St. Anne's, it would have gone on like that for maybe my whole life, except for the fact that I got pregnant at the age of 16. A young man came along and changed my life. And it took me out of my childhood home, and it put me in this infant and maternity home, where my two worlds collided in a humiliating and devastating way. Excuse me. So I couldn't lie about being pregnant, because pregnancy grows and pregnancy shows. So I was used to having all of my truth to be very secret and nobody know about it. But here was one that was kind of public. There were sometimes as many as 14 girls living on the floor with me, plus all the nuns and the people who worked there. They all knew that I was pregnant. So I was uncomfortable with the idea that so many people had access to part of my story. It made me feel like I was out of control of the situation. But I could still lie, and I did. I lied about how I got pregnant. I told a beautiful, romantic and tragic love story that had no resemblance to the truth. I could lie about who I was when I was outside of the home, and I made the girls feel like I was a badass. I let them believe that I was popular and sought after by all the boys and Also, none of that even came close to resembling my reality. While I was at St. Anne's, I lied about Janet. Janet was my friend. Now, you have to understand that when your life is false, you can't really have a lot of friends, because the closer people get to you, the more chance that the truth is going to out. So Janet was relatively new, and she was this tiny little person, physically. She was a little person, but she had this huge personality and this giant head of hair to go with it, and I loved her completely. I couldn't believe she wanted to be my friend. But I couldn't tell the girls at St. Anne's that, because it was true. So instead I told them that there was a girl named Janet who was a hot mess. And she was just so weird, and she was following me around all the time, and she wanted to be my friend, and I couldn't stand her. And finally I told them about the time when Janet annoyed me so hard that I just put the beat down on her. Now, you can see by the way that I did the beat down gesture that I've never put the beat down on anybody. But, you know, this was my fantasy world. And I told the story of this, of me kicking her ass in such epic details that the story lasted an hour. The girls were riveted, and, you know, we all passed the day that way. What I didn't know was that Janet was the kind of person who would never leave a friend in distress alone for long. She found out where I was. She got in her car, and she drove to St. Anne's. She walked right past the reception area, got onto the elevator, went up to the second floor, came to the common area where there were couches and games and things where the girls gathered together when they weren't in their rooms, and she announced herself. Yeah, when the girls realized that they had the Janet from the epic beatdown story right there in front of them, they called her in and started to talk with her. And I had no idea this was happening. I was in my room minding my own business. And when I came out to the common area, I saw them all in a huddle in the middle of the room. And Janet was right there in the center of them. And when they realized that I was in the room, all eyes turned to look at me. And every one of their faces was filled with a kind of mocking contempt. And I froze with terror. I knew that the girls had told Janet the story that I had told them, and I knew that Janet had told the girls the truth. And right then and there, my two worlds just collided in one horrifying, humiliating moment, and I couldn't move. I don't even know how I got out of that moment. I seem to recall that Janet laughed it off and moved on to the next part of the day. She was generous that way. But she also never wanted to be my friend again after that day. And I was heartbroken about that. It was a devastating loss. But I still had a baby to have, and so I just moved on with my life. I had the child. I placed him for adoption. And then I tried to get back to my life. Now, I had a new healthy respect for the truth at this point. And the only problem was I had no idea how to do it. I'd been lying for so long, I didn't even know what my truth was. And I was working in therapy. I was trying to figure out how to be an authentic person, but it just wasn't working. And my big break came when I got a part in a play that a friend of mine wrote. And turns out I'm a really good actress, which shouldn't surprise me because I'd been pretending my whole life. So it came kind of naturally to me. But it was different on stage because somebody else wrote down the script, okay? All my insight, all my pithy lines, they were all written for me. I didn't have to take any responsibility for it. All I had to do was remember the lines and deliver the lines. And it was easy. There was no risk involved in it at all. And I started to wonder, could this be applied to the truth as well? So I went and I got some of those 5x7 index cards. And I made cue cards for my life. And I wrote every question that I could think of that people had asked me. Questions like, what do you read? Or what did you do this summer? Or what do you want to do with your life? And, you know, people are always asking these conversational questions, which I compulsively lied my answers to. But on my cue cards, I sat down and thought about, what is the true answer? What is really what is true for me? And I wrote those answers down. And then I memorized them, just like I was memorizing a script in a play. And then I was rehearsing and practicing all the time. And I delivered those answers every chance I got. And I was getting really good at playing the part of Nancy in the world. And I was really happy with my progress. Every once in a while, I slipped up. And I found myself telling a story and embellishing a little bit epically, and I'd stop myself. I had a zero tolerance policy because I was really committed to getting well. And so I'd stop myself and I'd announce to whoever I was talking to, oh, by the way, second half of that story, total bullshit. Sorry, I thought I was getting a little boring, thought I'd spice it up a little bit. And, you know, they'd all freeze for a moment and be like, what? And then they'd laugh it off and shake their head. They'd say, Nancy's crazy, you know, and they'd forgive me immediately, most of them anyway. Some of them had a little difficult time with my process. They thought they didn't like it so much. But that's okay, because what was important was that I was learning about myself. And what was important, really important, was that I was learning that it was safe for me to present myself authentically to the world, to show people who I really was, what I really thought, what I was really feeling. It's still terrifying to this day for me to let somebody into my inner circle, to let them know my intimate spaces, you know, but I am committed to doing it because I have experienced the transformative quality of life when you are 100% authentically yourself. I have, I now can say that the people who know me. And now when people tell me that they love me, for the first time in my life, I was realizing that it was me that they loved. When I was little, I didn't have that experience. They loved me. I knew it was me they loved. When my little boy that I placed for adoption came to be 18 years old. So 18 years had passed. He came back to find me. And he was a young man getting ready to go off to college. And he had a lot of questions. And I am thrilled and proud to say that I answered every single one of his questions truthfully.
So the thing that's wonderful about Nancy is that she is so plainly honest now because of how she was as a, you know,
she just put herself on a program.
Yeah.
I think that I was so fascinated by the idea that she had to script the truth so that she could perform the truth, because what was more natural or organic to her was to tell the lies. Yeah.
And if you read her book, you would understand.
One Child for Another. You can find that on Amazon. It's so good.
The context more clearly as to why this was a part of her authentic self as a child.
Yeah,
it was protective.
I think lying is a survival strategy that, like a lot of survival strategies, then comes back and bites you in the ass when you get older. Before we go on to the next story for today, we want to thank Baltimore Magazine. You can find them at baltimoremagazine.com or on the newsstand. And they have a new podcast called Local Flavor Live, which is hosted by their dining editors, and it covers all the new happenings in the food scene. So you can check that out at iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, baltimoremagazine.com.
We also want to thank Golden West, which is a delicious restaurant in Hamden, been around since 1997. With food based in the New Mexican tradition, they have a ton of delicious items, including many vegan-friendly options.
And you're not lying.
No.
You're telling the truth. So this next story is told by a lawyer named Ivan Bates, a lawyer here in Baltimore. He actually ran last year for state's attorney, but he's a really well-known defense lawyer, has been for a while. And this is a story that offers a personal take on a big scandal that has dominated Baltimore news for quite a while. So take a listen.
So it was 2010. I had two cases. One involved a young man and his wife, and the other involved a young lady. These cases involved an individual named Wayne Jenkins. I'd seen Wayne Jenkins in 2008, but 2010 I got to know Wayne Jenkins. Wayne Jenkins was a about 5'8", sandy blonde hair, hard chin, kind of a cocky attitude. See, the first case, he stops my client, who's basically talking to his friend, says the client has marijuana in the car. Client says he doesn't. Then from there, Wayne Jenkins finds money, takes half the money, takes my client's ID, goes back to my client's house, breaks in my client's house while his wife is there, all along with their young children. She's terrified, and she hits the alarm button. The silent alarm goes off. The real police come. Wayne Jenkins tells them he has it, and they leave. They arrest my client and his wife because they find a gun in the house. At that moment in time, I got to see who Wayne Jenkins was. But Wayne Jenkins also had another case involving a young lady. She went to go see her brother. They talked. She's driving down the street. Wayne Jenkins stops her, finds a gun in her car. Well, she's taken the gun to the church for the gun buyback program. Wayne Jenkins wants her to tell on her brother. They had no reason to stop her. We go to trial on her case, and I lose. The first case involving the man and the wife, I had information showing that my client's wife hit the burglar alarm, and Wayne Jenkins lied. I gave that to the state's attorney's office, and they dismissed that case. So I'd won the first time against Wayne Jenkins, but I lost the second time. The young lady had no record. She went to jail. Over the next few years, I watched Wayne Jenkins' career grow and flourish. He became a sergeant. He began to arrest more and more people I came in contact with. He would lie in court. He would steal their money. He would plant drugs. He would plant guns. I watched this. Then finally, in 2014, Wayne Jenkins was stopped. A prosecutor stood up to him, told what happened, and he was no longer an officer. I thought he was gone. But in 2015, he was back. He was back bigger, better than ever. And 2015 is also the same time period I received a call. I received a call from a young lady who was crying on the phone saying she didn't do it. And this was on May 1st, 2015. I told her to come into my office. We talked, and she let me know her name was Sergeant Alicia White, and she was charged in the death of Freddie Gray. I had to make a decision. I really didn't represent a lot of police officers, but this young lady was crying. She needed help, and I felt the criminal justice system wasn't going to give her a fair trial, so I took her case. When I took her case, boy, oh boy, the public backlash I received was swift and harsh. I was called Uncle Tom, sellout, FOP lawyer, Donald Trump's lawyer, and the Aryan Nation lawyer. Everything possible you could think of, I was called. During the day, I would go to court for her and be called names. But in the afternoon, I would go to the jail to meet people to find out if they had been arrested by Wayne Jenkins, because I knew Wayne Jenkins was bad. I told the police department what he was doing. They didn't listen. I told the state's attorney's office what he was doing. They didn't listen. If no one else was going to listen, I had to do something. I learned a lot in representing Sergeant Alicia White. And I was able to finally put what I learned to use in 2016. I had a young man who was riding down the street with a friend. And he was waiting at the young man's house. As they get ready to pull off, Sergeant Wayne Jenkins, another officer is called the Gun Trace Task Force. You may have heard of them. They decide that they're going to stop him, but he's going the wrong way up a one-way street, and that is illegal. Didn't matter to Wayne Jenkins. He stopped them, says he sees that he has drugs, takes his money, takes his keys, takes his license, and goes straight back to his house. Now he's going from house to house. And there's one problem. One of the houses he went to belonged to an older African-American retired school teacher. She saw Wayne Jenkins try to break in her house. He tells her he's a police officer. He goes to the next house, finds out that's where my client lives, finds out that my client has a safe. There's some money in there. Him and his buddies break in the safe. They steal the money, and they've hit payday. Now we get ready to go to court. And what I learned from Sergeant Alicia White was to beat the police that are bad, you had to stay a step ahead of them. So when I represented Sergeant Alicia White, I learned about police procedures. I learned about how police think, how police write reports. I learned about the general orders. And most of all, I learned I need an investigator so I can stay one step ahead of Wayne Jenkins. And I had to understand what his Achilles was. I was able to learn that. And in this particular case, with this young man, I had it. See that older African-American school teacher? We filed motions, and she was my star. My first motion, because you're trying to say the evidence is bad, is that he illegally stopped my client. And the second motion was that they broke in my client's house illegally. Once we file those motions, you go into court and you have a big hearing. It's called a motion hearing. My client's seated there. Wayne Jenkins walks in. He sees me. But before he walks in, I make sure that African-American school teacher is sitting at the front door. I wanted him to know that I knew what he had done. So when he walks in, he looks at me, he's on the witness stand, he has his swagger, and we're going back and forth. And then all of a sudden, Wayne Jenkins does something I'd never seen him do. He admitted to violating my client's constitutional rights. I won the case. Game over. I couldn't really figure out why, but I knew he knew that we knew, and we were going to bring out that he had broken in and stolen money from my client's safe. So I learned so much in representing Sergeant Alicia White. And what I learned was, in life, you can have a case and you can have a cause. And Sergeant Alicia White, yeah, I took a lot of heat for that case, but it's because of that case it allowed me to be victorious in my cause. We all know that Sergeant Alicia White was able to be found not guilty. But what we really need to know is that once my client won his case, the federal government reached out to us. I knew they were going to do that. When they reached out to us, all the information for all the other clients I had been compiling, I was able to take over to the U.S. Attorney's Office and give to them. They were able to take that information, talk to my other clients along with other information they had. My client is home with his family, and Wayne Jenkins is doing 25 years where he belongs. Thank you.
Like a Hollywood movie to me, in a sense. It's like a defense lawyer who knows there's a dirty cop and keeps trying to, you know, gather enough evidence to get him and get him and get him, and then, you know, finally has his day.
Mm-hmm. Ivan's one of the good guys. We are very grateful to have him on our side, which is the side that does not lie.
Yes, or only just tells, like, small lies.
We want to thank you for listening today. We want to also thank The Wine Source, which is also located in Hamden. We're very Hamden-friendly with our sponsors. They have insanely delicious beer and wine, and their selection is out of this world, off the charts. Everything's just an amazingly good price point. I love that goddamn place.
It's great. And that's at 3601 Elm Avenue in Hamden. You can leave us a review at Apple Podcasts. I have checked out our reviews lately, and we're doing good. But Jessica's not to read them.
I can't handle it.
But anyway, and you can find out more about our live shows. We've got an awesome live show coming up on October 24th, Twilight Zone.
Yes.
Stories about everything from the supernatural to the super weird. We've got a show in November, one in December, so check all that out at stoopstorytelling.com and join us back here next week for more stories from the Stoop.
Stay safe.
See ya.
Don't lie.
But I know what is wrong. And I know